Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Chris Evans here. A big thank you for downloading our Virgin Radio podcast. Coming up on this week's edition of The Best of the Breakfast Show with Skye, Fern Cotton talks legume and laughter, delving into her new cookbook, Happy Vegan. The hilarious Jason Byrne swings by in the midst of his Wrecked But Ready UK tour. Andrew Ridgely charms us with stories from his brand new memoir, Wham! George and Me. And Jesse Buckley chats the amazing new film, Judy. Plus loads more great guests. Enjoy, my friends, enjoy.
In 1975, two teenagers with a love of music met in Bushy. Little did they know they would go on to become the biggest band in the world. Telling his side of that incredible story in his new memoir, Wham! George and Me, please welcome a true statesman of pop, the one and only Andrew Ridgely.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Not been described as a statesman of pop before, but I like it.
By the way, you dress quite statesmanlike tonight. Today, you look amazing, as fresh as the daisy. Like you haven't aged a single minute, let alone a few decades. Reading your book yesterday, day before, and this morning again, I literally couldn't put it down. Honestly, it's such a fantastic book. I didn't realise, and obviously I was in the thick of it at the time. I didn't realise when we're only around for 4 years. That's the thing that first struck me.
Yeah, I mean, 4.5 from signing, 3 really from first release. Well, first hit.
Yeah.
First release wasn't a hit by any stretch of the imagination.
3 years? I had no idea.
Well, three years, 6 months.
It was so brief. Yeah. So you met to get in the mid-70s. Tell us about the first time you ever clapped eyes on each other, you and George.
He was the new boy, Form 2A1, which means comprehensive 1970, new term. And walked in by the teacher, looking a bit sheepish as you would the new boy, and she cast around for someone who'd act as mentor, take him under their wing, and I'd never been given the charge of a new boy before, and I thought, you know, this could be fun. So put my hand up, and he was delivered to me.
Imagine if you hadn't. Oh my God, we wouldn't have Club Tropicana, we wouldn't have Young Guns, we wouldn't have the final. And you, it was your decision to form a band, and you didn't ask him, you told him, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it'd been something that had been discussed for a couple of years since we were 14 or adolescents, and it was always after the O levels, after the A levels. But came a day when I had to make some decisions. I left school to go to college because I wasn't attending, and at that point I thought, right, this is the day. And I phoned him up and said, look, we're forming a band. There wasn't I wasn't giving him a choice. I wasn't asking him. I was to.
And there was like 6 of you at the beginning, wasn't there?
There were five of us.
The executive. That's what it was.
Five of us.
It's five of you. Okay.
Yeah, the original line.
All right. So they
had many forms.
Right. And how did it get to Wham from there?
Well,
by the way, cool name, The Executive. I really like that.
Yeah, we thought it was pretty good, pretty slick. Well, we had various incarnations, and unfortunately, things fell apart somewhat. We had a gig. We reduced down to 4, and it was kind of a definitive lineup. And we had a big gig that we were working towards. Big for us, Harrow Tech. It's not exactly a big gig, but
it's a gig.
Yeah, it was a gig.
There's a stage, and you're going to play it.
And it was a gig built on sand. It never actually, one of our band members had been stringing us along. I don't know why, but so at that point, he left, my brother left, and that left George and I, and we just continued writing.
Where did the name Wham come from?
Lifted it from the song. It was a temporary name.
Right. Not bad.
Yeah. But the longer it was around, the more we thought, that's actually.
And you used to lend it. So when you did something, it was a Wham something, wasn't it? So the Wham took America to, it was Wham America. And it was Wham this and Wham that, wasn't it? It was quite handy
for
that.
It was Whamtastic.
It really was. So how did you get, I mean, you know, around at the time, it was pretty tough at the time because you're just post punk. Some great bands around anyway. And there's you and George, you know, a duo. How did you do it?
Well, post-punk, I mean, it was an enormously rich era for creativity and musical creativity.
And the world was going crazy at the time, wasn't it? Because you had the Cold War and the miners' strikes.
Yeah, it was a time of real change. And there was an awful lot going on politically. You know, Britain was coming out of a dark period and it was all change. And we were young, you know, we had a great optimism and we were looking forward. And punk democratized music, you know. If you could play three chords, you could be in a band.
Yeah.
And the home recording, the Fostex, the four-track recorders, it brought music to anyone who had a creative idea. And that's really what enabled us to be a band, even though we weren't a band as such.
Okay, well, and was America, was that via one song, or was it one moment, or was it one connection, one conversation?
The US. Yeah. The US was really as a consequence of... we had a number one with Wake Me Up there. But the profile was built really through the China trip. As you said, it was done to avoid touring. George, whilst he liked performing, didn't like touring. Didn't like living out of suitcase, didn't like being away from home. And so that really... built a really big profile outside of kind of music, if you like.
Yeah, and when you went to China, I mean, everybody was talking about it. You talk about it in your book, and it's fascinating. You talk about going to China and playing in stadiums which the biggest crowd they'd seen thus far was for ping pong matches, but that was in the tens of thousands because people love ping pong, table tennis in China. And then the kids who have bought tickets being given guidelines by the government of how much they were allowed to enjoy your concert or not.
Yes, they were advised to listen, but I can't remember.
Listen, but not live. Listen to the message, but don't live the message.
Yeah, yeah. Don't enjoy it too much.
Don't
I think
enjoy
was
it
the
too
yeah.
Much.
There was an instruction. There was an instruction leaflet that
right.
came.
Right, and the Chinese tour cost a fortune, but it's okay because we're going to make a fortune until the Chinese government said no, you can't have that money because we don't give it to people who aren't ours, even though you earned it here.
That's more or less it, yeah. although it wasn't a fortune, but there was some loot that was. You couldn't take it out of the country, like you say. So it was offered to us in bicycles.
So they offered to pay you in bicycles. It's unbelievable. And not only that, they were second-hand workers' bicycles.
They were, yeah. Wow. They were only workers' bicycles. They were,
if you had those now, though, you've got them in a warehouse in China somewhere.
Oh, my goodness me. Andrew, you got to go now. Not because I don't want you here, because apparently you've got to go somewhere else.
I have.
Can we have a round of applause for Andrew Ridge?
Yay!
Is out now, and it's a brilliant book. Andrew, it's a pleasure to see you again.
Thanks
for all these
me,
years.
Chris.
Thank
Good
you.
See you again.
You were brilliant.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
We're in conversation with Andrew Ridgely, Skunk and Nancy playing live for us. Jason Byrne also here now. Cue the Jason Byrne hilarious YouTube story.
It's not hilarious. And I shouldn't have said. I mean, I don't know who told you. I mean, this is
everybody
not,
told
you know
me.
What it's like? But coming in here, out yeah. there, is uh-huh. like it's like going into a room full of grannies.
Is it?
Yeah. Because, like, you just say one thing, and it's in here, in your ear.
Yeah, and we usually have our knitting with us as well.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said anything. No, I got a call, I got my management about 3 or 4 days ago.
Right. Oh, 3 hours recent. It's hot. Yeah. It's so fresh. Come on.
So they said, somebody from U2 wants your number. Right. And I went, which one? And he goes, I don't know. They won't tell me which one. And I went, oh, well, whoever it's not or is, what do they want? And they go, I don't know. Somebody rang and said, can somebody from you two have your number for something that he can't tell you? So I went, oh, okay. So I was waiting to see who it was going to be, which one or whatever and everything. And I did a gig in Canterbury last night. Yeah. And then I came off on the break and it was, it was Bono.
Yeah, Bono. It's always Bono.
It's always it.
Yeah, it's the singer. They say, I think it might be the singer.
Yeah, it might be the singer.
I think it might be the singer.
So anyway, I still don't know what he wants because he said he must have gone to bed or something. Well, I don't know. I doubt gone to bed. But he said, hi, I've never met him, right? Which is mad. So we just went, hi, Jason, it's Bono. Is there any chance you can take a call from me? I can't tell you what it is yet.
He's great. He's
now,
great.
I don't know what it is. So when I find out,
yeah.
I can ring back into you.
It'll be something very cool.
Will it?
It always is.
Oh,
it's
my
always
God.
Very
I mean,
cool.
But the thing is about in Ireland, when Bono rings you, and you just, you go, yes.
Yeah.
You
if it was about art, it would be Adam.
Adam
would phone you about art because he loves his art.
I wonder what it is.
And I don't think Larry calls anyone
even the other members of the band.
Does he not?
I think that's it. You know, it's his band, don't you? No, he's the boss.
He owns it. It's his football.
He formed the band. He's the boss of the band.
In school or something.
He could fire Bono if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder
if he's had any written warnings.
Can you imagine? I'd say yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Jason Byrne is on this massive tour. He's very funny. The team love him. We all love him. He's playing in October, throughout October and November, and the 1st of December, Cardiff. And then you're calling it a day for December.
Yeah.
Come on, people. Christmas, they're in a mood. They want to come out. They want to be made to laugh.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember doing Christmas
Half
gigs.
Of the job is done for you.
I know. Oh, is it?
Come on.
That's kind of a myth. It's a myth. I don't know if you find this.
Oh, come on. But people are in a great mood at Christmas.
When everybody's hammered and stuff in a room, they don't really listen to
a
comic.
Didn't say hammered.
Oh.
Didn't say
happy,
hammered.
Happy.
I meant it, but I didn't say it.
Yeah, I know, but I said it. So it's okay. You won't get in trouble. I will.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's like people just don't really listen at Christmas.
Jasonbyrne.ie. Is that an Irish thing?
That's the Irish internet.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, it's the Irish. Like .co.uk is English. That's the Irish. And then .au, I think, is Australian.
Like JasonByrne.ie.
Yeah, I am the Irish internet.
I thought it was JasonByrne. That is.
Yeah, that is it.
That is. I am.
Therefore.
Okay. So will this go anywhere else? Do you play abroad?
Yeah,
do they like you in Australia? Australians love British comedians, don't they?
Yeah, I'm going to Australia. I'm doing, I'll do the Irish tour. And then I have a children's book out as well. So I'm doing all that kind of stuff as well.
Got it all going on.
Yeah, I know. Irish Got Talent Judge, children's book. Feel a pattern.
Love it.
I know, yeah. So, but I love playing Australia. In Australia, I was on stage. And there was a guy in the front, and he was an old enough guy. I don't know, probably in his 70s or so. And he had a big white sock up, and they were wearing shorts with the white socks. But he had one white sock
it's
up.
It's already funny.
Right, yeah. And I said, what's the story with your leg? And he went, oh, my leg's gone. Which, you know, I thought he was like, when my Irish dad would go, my leg's gone, as in it doesn't work. It's like, the blood's not flowing anymore.
I actually
teased him about, oh, your leg's gone. Don't be moaning and all this, you know, get up, move around a bit. Maybe do a bit of exercise. So I had a break. It came out and his prosthetic leg was on the stage, right at the mic. and I went, oh, it's actually gone.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, we've all done it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we haven't. Just you.
Yeah, just me. Okay. That's the people I attract.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
She made her name on Kids TV, conquered radio, and is now publishing books left, right and centre, podcasting all over the place, and even running her own festival. How does she have the energy? I'll tell you how. Vegetables. Please welcome the brains behind the new book, Happy Vegan, the one and only Fern Cotton.
There you go. Happy vegan to you. Happy vegan to you. Are you actually a vegan, Fern Cotton?
I am a vegetarian who cannot give up omelettes.
All right, so you're nearly a vegan.
So nearly there.
You're just a broken egg or two away from being a full-on vegan. Otherwise, would it be it? Would you be the full-on?
Yeah. I don't have dairy, any of that jazz. But I love an egg.
I love an egg. But, as one might imagine, the things you could struggle to give up to become something, I would have thought an omelette would be pretty much amongst the easiest.
I've just got a weird affinity with omelettes. Cheese, I didn't find difficult. I'm not that bothered about it. But eggs, I love
an egg.
So
how do you have your omelette then? No butter, no cheese?
No, cook it in coconut oil.
But because you have eggs, therefore you're not a vegan.
No, I'm a vegetarian.
Why don't you make use of all the other stuff that you can have because you're a vegetarian and not the vegan yet?
I'm headed there. I think a lot of us are headed in the right direction, which is going to help the planet, make us feel better, and I'm on the way. And that's why I don't want this book to be a scary thing. Like, if you're not a vegan, you can't even try these vegan recipes. It is for people like me who are headed on the way, for people that have never tried vegan food, or for fully fledged vegans.
Okay, so Fern Cotton, Happy Vegan, easy plant-based recipes to make the whole family happy. Now, people love you and they know that you mean all this. And as we say a lot on the show, the authenticity of the message is only as worthy as the authenticity of the messenger. And so you fulfill both those roles.
Thank you.
Top three recipes in this book.
If we're going to die tomorrow.
Death row vegan recipes, please.
Oh, God. Well, I've made one in the bag, but I arrived on a motorcycle, so it's slightly mangled.
Yeah, it's not.
We had some motorcycle helmet chat earlier on.
Oh, really?
Went quite well, I thought.
Wow. I was wearing one earlier.
Sizes of helmets.
So this is a loaf that incorporates bananas and avocados, but it's a sweet loaf cake.
Who wants some?
Chocolate.
Yay!
Looks, I can't hear you. Who wants some?
Hey!
Say it like you mean it. Who wants some? Come on.
It's vegan. That's vegan. No eggs in there. Nothing
There's
like
no
that.
No eggs.
There's a fantastic chocolate fudge cake in the book. Right. Also, there is a lovely, very easy tomato coconut dal, which my husband and I had for dinner last night.
Stop teasing us.
It takes 15 minutes. I can't open it. That's why I'm not teasing you. I genuinely can't get the lid off. There we go.
It's been so weak from no meat.
No, look, I'm chickpea
powered. I can't open the tin. Somebody help me.
That was very low-hanging comedy fruit.
I'm sorry. But
we need some sort. Are we allowed knives in this building?
No.
This isn't the BBC. Do you want
I know. Okay.
You well, fireworks just display if you like.
Just break it off.
Break a chunk off your hand and try some.
Go on, be your.
But it's all got a bit bashed up on the bike, but it's more in the flavour.
Oh, it's definitely a nine. It might be
a nine. I'm fine with a nine. I'm absolutely happy with a nine.
That's great. That's gorgeous.
Yeah, and it's got loads of avocado bananas in it. It's a chocolate loaf, but it's got a ton of good veg. So you can trick your children with it by, you know, with all the avocados and stuff.
You're made of beetroot brownies.
I love a beetroot brownie.
They're insane.
They're fantastic. Yeah. Yeah.
A beetroot brownie, it just you don't know what's going on.
You've only read about that. You've never been.
No, I haven't.
You're just reading about stuff and pretending you've done it.
No, I actually...
Come on, where have you had a beetroot brownie?
I've had it, yeah.
Where?
My ex-wife used to make them and we had them.
It's already getting more distant.
Yeah, no.
That's
no,
a story.
She's still there. So she made them and she's an amazing cook. Beetroot brownie and it looks amazing and then you put it in your mouth and it's like, it still is amazing.
And you can have courgette cupcakes, you can use sweet potato in cakes, all sorts of stuff to replace the butter.
Now this is good, but thank God, because you know when you're on shows and it's not good.
Yeah, it's okay.
It is good and it's also moist. It's nice and
it's
moist.
That's really good.
Thank you very much.
It's not over moist, but so it's not at all dry. Yeah. It's nice.
And very healthy.
By the way.
It is, it's very healthy.
Can you tell me about legume, please? Because Vassos, you will know about this, actually. So you can divvy this conversation up between the two of you. There's a book about, it's not ultra runners, it's
Eat and Run by Scott Jurek.
No.
Is it Born to Run?
No, it's not that either.
Is it the one where...
Can I finish the question? It's not University Challenge, for heaven's sake.
Well, we're trying to help you.
It's not
trying
you start
to get
it
out of your brain.
You don't get more points for interrupting the question.
Okay.
It's about somebody who... It's about a tribal... Some people somewhere...
Right. It is Born to Run.
It is Born to Run.
Shall I Google
it? But it's not Born to Run.
It's the creature.
I've got Born to Run at home and it's not it.
The one that runs... He runs around with no shoes.
Don't point.
I'm just saying it like
that. That's about barefoot running.
Jason, it's the same guy, I think, but it's the one...
Oh, we are arguing about the same thing.
It's not. That's the guy with the bald head. I've seen him on loads of lectures on YouTube. Can I please get my question out?
Right, go ahead.
It would save us a load of time.
This show is so stressful.
For you. You want to be on this side of the desk.
I know.
Spinning the blimmin' plates. Anyway, here we go. No, so legume.
Yeah.
I'm hearing legume is where you go for longevity, for stamina, and it's not about carbs because carbs are good, but they bring in peaks and troughs. And if you eat legume constantly in your life, that is the perfect fuel for a human being. Go, anyone.
Well,
not you.
I'm not a long...
All I heard is legume, and is that not French for vegetables?
Well, I think it's a good way to go because you've got protein, you've got fibre, and... I guess the carbohydrates that are released more slowly.
But I heard it was revolutionary.
The tribe of which you speak are this very sort of backward tribe called Greeks, and they are from Crete.
He can say this because he's Greek.
I can say it because I'm a Greek, and I don't really mean it.
There's
this thing in the mountains, growing in the mountains of actually the Peloponnesian Crete called Horta. Horta, and that means that is legumes.
Right.
And yes, the ancient Greek messengers who ran over many, many hundreds of miles to deliver, you know, and they were the
marathon.
Well, like him, like the guy who ran from Marathon to Athens, Pheidippides. They would be fueled by the stuff that they could get on the hoof, because
I've just said all this. What's the book called? That's my only question. Is what's the book called?
You never said that.
I did.
You didn't.
Does anybody know?
Is he just here just to know stuff? He's amazing.
He's Greek, isn't he? He's our resident Greek.
Thank you.
That's what he does.
I thought you spoke Russian.
It's the same guy who wrote Born to Run, whose name I've forgotten.
Do you think it is?
You were halfway there, Jason. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Fern, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Fern, so lovely, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
The Happy Vegan Cookbook is out for Christmas, and it's out now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've heard from three guests already, but there's loads more still to come. Andy and Mikita Oliver chat the Cheltenham Book Festival and have a shot at the most stressful game on radio. Andy McCluskey and Paul Humphries of OMD fame talk touring America. Mark Strong tells us all about the new Sky Original series Temple. And Bill Bryson discusses his brand new book, The Body, A Guide for Occupants. All that and more, but first, Dapper Dave, who's next?
She stole the show in the hit Sky original Chernobyl, and from today can be seen in the superb biopic Judy, the film that gives an insight into the life and times of the one and only Judy Garland. Please welcome a lady with limitless talent, the singer, the actress, the simply delightful Jessie Buckley.
Good morning, Jessie.
Hello.
Hello. Congratulations on a fantastic film. Fantastic film. It arrested me when I went to see it last Thursday. It was a preview theatre on a Thursday morning. It was pouring down. It was full of crusty old critics. You could hear a pin drop, and then you could hear sobbing and blubbing, and you could hear mucus bubbling from nostrils.
Weep.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. All right, so the story of Judy Garland can be told in many ways. How do you and your team tell it this time around?
It's a period of her life when she comes to London to perform in the Talk of the Town, and it's just before she passes away, 6 months before she passes away. And I suppose it shows the humanity and vulnerability of this incredible, precious, powerful gift that Judy Garland was to the world, and actually at the crux of it, that she was a person who was being puppeteered within an inch of her life, and it cost her life.
Yes. But, so puppeteered within an inch of her life for almost all her life.
Yeah.
So from the age of when?
From the age she was on stage with Louis B. Mayer, like when she got involved with Wizard of Oz, and yeah.
It's incredible. And the way it's told is so beautifully told. And it's like when you have a life that is so rich and so dramatic, there are so many different ways you could tell it as a producer, as a writer, as a director. And I'm always thinking, oh, my goodness me, of all the options, you know, too many options sometimes.
Yeah.
And the way they've chosen to tell this, you know, it starts with her as a child. It starts with her in Hollywood. And then we quickly get to the here and now as far as your movie's concerned, in period, just before she died, 6 months before she died, when she then has to start earning a living by coming to Europe, where we still love her, as America has forgotten about her, to play some shows, to get some money, to try and get enough to buy a house or just the flat or apartment so she can keep her kids.
Yeah. That was the real honest truth of it. You know, she had absolutely nothing by the end of her life. She didn't even have a pillow to put under her head. And she, her children were kind of taken away from her because of that. And all she wanted to be was, I suppose, settle down, having worked her socks off for all those years.
And now your character is really, really interesting. And the way you play her, because you feel... first of all, tell everybody who your producer character is and where... Did she really... She does exist. She's still alive, isn't she?
Yeah, she's alive and well and drinking champagne at 12 a.m. and told me how to do that. It was very important to my preparation.
But back in the day, she was a young producer.
So in our story, she had just become Bernard Delfont, who was the main Mr. Mogul producer.
The impresario.
In Talk of the Town. And she was his right-hand woman. And so when Judy Garland came to London, she was given the...
She was lumbered.
Yeah, with the task of looking after this woman, making sure she showed up on time to perform, you know, for the people who came to watch her. But she was amazing. And Rosalind, the real Rosalind, was very generous and kind of, you know, presenting what that world was for me. So, yeah.
So you tell the young producer's story for us through her eyes and her mouth. But you met this lady who was that person. What was it like hearing the stories from the horse's mouth? Because she was the woman in the rehearsal room. She was the woman who was begging Judy to get out of a hotel room. She was the woman who left the Talk of the Town in a black cab to go back to the hotel to bang on Judy's door and say, please, Judy, you're going to get me the sack. You've got to come and perform.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's quite terrifying playing somebody who's still alive, because she's like sending emails being like, don't do me disservice. I'm like... But she, she talked quite openly and candidly about how it was quite painful for her to see Judy, and to, she was at a point in her life where she was in a, also a very male-dominated, puppeteered world where she was trying to move forward and thought that she had to be quite brusque and emotionally closed off. And then she met Judy, who's just this tornado of emotional destruction.
Yeah, it's literally the perfect storm of emotions.
Yeah, so I think she, they both kind of cracked each other in a way. And for her, I think she really, she, what she said is she really cared about Judy Garland, and she really, she was worried for her, you know, and she was sad that actually this very special, precious gift was being taken for granted.
Here's my last question about this film, Judy, for you. Okay, released in cinemas today, go and see this film. When Renee sings the song, let's just leave it at that, the song, right? When she sings lots of songs in the film, and she absolutely knocks it out of the park. But obviously she's lip syncing to her singing in a studio. So she, it's her singing, but you can tell that she then lip syncs, and they go to a studio recording, and the performance on set is a different vocal performance. You can see that. But then when she does the song, I thought, I think they've taken her vocal performance from the soundstage, because it's so much more real than all the others. Might that be right?
That is correct, yeah.
It makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's well, clever. It's so fragile.
It's so clever, though, that
it's
did that.
Such a beautiful song. I mean, it's the saddest song in the world. It's the saddest, hopeful song I've ever heard
it
in
is,
my
it
life.
Is, it is. It's ridiculous, ridiculous, apathetic optimism,
yeah.
Isn't it? Oh, God. Right, what do you do next?
I'm going to be doing Fargo.
Okay, and you're back to Chicago when for that?
I go this week, yeah.
All right, so, Chicago, nice place to hang out, Chicago?
It's going to be Baltic.
Oh, I forgot, of course it is, isn't
like
it?
Chris Lai's nose, like they had that apocalyptic kind of freeze last Christmas,
all
didn't
right.
It?
Well, on the air, I've said this off the air, but on the air, of course, congratulations on Chernobyl as well. You're so modest, you're so humble. 10 Emmys and counting, by the way, for Chernobyl, so well done, all right. Not been a bad year, has it?
Oh, I've been having a lovely time.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Great things come in sevens. The Seven Wonders of the World. The Magnificent Seven. The Film Seven. It's also the number of decades the Cheltenham Literature Festival has run for, and soon to be seen fronting Sky Arts live at Cheltenham Literature Festival. Please welcome the wonderful pair, Andy and Makita Oliver.
All right, are they married? No, they're mum and daughter, just in case you're interested. It's Andy with an I.
Andy with an I. People keep getting very surprised that they're like, oh, we just thought you were all of us that knew
happy
each other.
Couple.
People think we're just really good friends that want to hang out with each other.
Like, no, she's, well, hopefully you are that too.
We are that too.
Now that we're working together.
The fruit of my womb. The fruit of my womb.
Okay,
thank you for saying that on the radio, Mum. So that's all right.
You got the 7th of October at 7 p.m. on Sky for 7 days, celebrating the 70th. That's all work.
It's
for
a
me.
Lot seven.
That's good. I like
it's a lucky
seven.
Number, right?
It's a very lucky number. Right. Okay, so how did you two cats get involved in all this?
Cats!
Meow. They just called us up and said, would you like to host?
Simple
these?
As that.
Yeah, yeah. And well, we said, that would be fantastic.
But you must be bookworms. You must love your literature.
Yeah, but I don't know how they knew that, because I don't know how anybody else knows that. I mean, the best times we ever had when she was little was that time when you take
well, this
out,
one over here?
Yeah, when she was small, she grew up from a baby. You know? And when she was a baby and I could trap her, she was reading to her. Those times with this, you know, you've got a kid. It's just lovely when you lie down with your baby and you take a little time out and everything stops and everybody shuts up and you're suddenly going, good night,
but it's not an old thing in my mum's life. Sort of the reading has continued throughout her life, and it's been a real backbone of our sort of
existence.
Our existence, exactly. I was sorting out her flat recently because she's moved into a new flat.
And she's very controlling.
And I'm very controlling. And it was just, it's still so...
Where you get that from.
It's obviously her father, Chris.
Yeah, no. What she means is I'm OCD and she's a mess. That's what we're saying.
Wow.
Or the yin and the yang, to put it more harmoniously.
The yin and the yang, we balance each other
That's
out.
That's all I'm saying. The Lennon and the McCartney.
We balance each other out.
Yes?
She threw my Lennon? Clothes away. That's all I wanted
no.
to know.
Oh,
okay, yeah. I'm
you're sitting in the wrong chair.
Yeah.
It doesn't, everyone wants to be Lennon, yeah. Don't
but they? I mean, books saved my life, really. When I was a kid in Bury St Edmunds, and I was really unhappy in the 70s because it was Suffolk and it was the 1970s and I was there, and it was just grim, and books were the thing that gave me hope. You know, I would go upstairs, little Twix
or any other chocolates are available, obviously, by Chris. And a great book. My mum took me to the library every week. I get 5 books out, and that's what I did
Best
every single day.
Best book of your childhood?
Best book of my childhood, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, really? Probably. Oh,
yeah. If you go into a bookshop now, they are things of beauty. Bookshops are beautiful.
Oh, they've always been pretty beautiful.
No, they've already always been pretty beautiful. But if you go into the kids' section now, for example, the bookshop, entirely different to back in our day.
Yeah.
They are a world of wonder.
Story corners.
That's where I sat in the library the other day, the kids' section. I was like, this is lovely.
See, she goes to the library just to do other work just and just to relax, because it's a great place to be.
The little chairs that are far too small for us, because I just think that's hilarious.
Well, if I could get my bum in one, I would. Let's say my glutes are fairly well developed.
Well, maybe you want to rejoin us when you return from the Cheltenham Festival for our Fit Butt and Thigh Thursday.
No, we did want to play your other game, though.
Go on, what's that?
You know, the name as many as you can.
She's very competitive. She was going, what are they playing?
What are they playing?
Who's winning? Yeah. I want to win. What are they doing?
Did you do well on that?
No, she was rubbish.
All right, well, here we go. Okay. Here we go. You ready? Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Look at Makita now. She's already... She's keen now, isn't she?
I've got spontaneous categories for you. Right,
go on, then.
Here we go. This is mum versus daughter.
Oh, no.
Like the generation game. Right, mum versus daughter.
Oh, no.
Let's see who wants to go first.
I created this.
Anybody got a coin?
Why have you done this to me, Makita?
Here we go. Which hand is a bit of plastic in?
That one.
Okay, so you go first.
Oh, no.
Who's going first?
Andy's going first. Mum's going first.
Okay, Andy, you're going first. Okay, so in 10 seconds, Andy, name as many other places in the UK beginning with Ch, just like Cheltenham, and your 10 seconds starts now.
What?
Come on.
Ch.
Ch. I don't know anyone.
Come on.
Don't talk, think.
Come on.
I can't think of any.
This might be our first zero.
I can't think of any.
Our first ever zero. I've got to tell you, everybody gets one just to prove they have a brain cell.
Sure. Okay, can I go?
Chippenham.
Chester.
Chippenham. Chesterfield.
Oh, right.
Chiltern. The Chilterns, Chipping Norton.
Oh, we just lost our job hosting the Cheltenham Literary.
Well, no, your mum has. However, you've still got a chance.
No, because I've still heard of Cheltenham.
Great. My go.
Yeah, okay. Chicago.
can't believe you just
saying.
That.
Chernobyl. Okay.
Chernobyl, yeah.
Here we go. So, none to beat.
It is the definition of a low bar.
This... Oh, my
God. It's the music. It freaks everyone. We've had some really clever people getting one out of...
Chris, I need to beat myself and the country.
Yeah. Let's go. Mum's none.
Are you ready? Okay.
Thanks for underlining.
I've got a category on hold in my head. I'm just trying to think of a fairer one.
Oh, God.
Okay,
please.
I've got one. I was going to ask you for children's authors in 10 seconds, right? Okay. Oh, I should have done. See her eyes there. Her skin went ashen. Her eyes glazed over. She became slightly faint and heady. But it's not fair, so I'm going to go for another geographical one.
Oh, God.
Okay.
She's really bad at
so
that.
For your mum, it was other places that begin with ch. For you,
hit
okay,
me.
Makita, you have 10 seconds to name as many other places that end in ham.
West Ham.
Yep, one.
East Ham.
You've won! That's it! Actually, you'd already won with West Ham.
Birmingham!
No, unbelievable! No. Okay,
the youth
of today once again leading the way. Why do the rest of us bother? I have no idea. Enjoy the Cheltenham Festival.
Thank you.
You are both awesome.
I was having such a good time and now I'm just depressed.
Sorry about that. Anyway, if you want to see how miserable Andy still is on Monday, 7 p.m. Sky Arts for a whole week.
Thank you, Chris.
Love to have you both here.
Chilton.
That was a right laugh. I said Chilton.
We said we both gave you Chilton.
Chipperary St Edmunds.
See, now we'd have allowed that.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Dapper Dave, over to you.
They've sold an eye-watering 15 million albums worldwide, are hailed as pioneers in their field, and continue to celebrate their 40th year as a band. Not a bad day at the office, boys. Ahead of the release of a new box set, greatest hits album, and a new tour, please welcome the wonderful Andy McCluskey and Paul Humphries from Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Chris.
Lovely story, this. It's a great story anyway, because it's your 40th anniversary, and we'll get into why it gets lovely in a moment or two. But first of all, travails of commuting. Yeah. Tell us about these guys.
Yeah, we abandoned our car. We're coming in from Richmond.
Right.
And we just abandoned our car in Chiswick.
Honestly?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. We jumped on the tube and we've been sharp elbowing our way onto trains to get here.
When were you two last worried about being late for anything?
A long time ago, actually. Exactly. We're normally well prepared, but it was just the ETA on the sat nav kept going, you know, 8:50, 9:10, 9:30.
Right, sorry.
Just run.
No, we're happy to be here.
No, but listen, we'll give you one of our direct lines. And if this happens again, you know, I don't want all customer news having a heart attack on our account. So it's easy as getting back from the US, back home from your tour, than getting from Richmond to here this morning.
It's faster.
It was.
Tell us about the US tour that you've just smashed.
Well, yeah, we were on tour for 2 months, on tour with the B-52s, actually.
What I love!
And Berlin. And Berlin.
Tell us where you played, how many people you played in
everywhere. We just finished everywhere. In Hyde Park last Tuesday.
Right.
So,
Not Hyde Park.
Central Park. You see, I'm already confused.
You're already back in London.
We just went all the way across America. We got evacuated off stage in Michigan for a typhoon warning. We had to get into a bunker three minutes.
Quite exciting, as long as nobody was hurt.
No,
as a result of that. So how big were you in America back in the day then?
Well, it took us a while to break America, because all the early songs, like Souvenir, this one, weren't properly released there. We had a dodgy deal, and it wasn't until...
Terrible record company. Their idea of releasing a record was hiding it under the carpet to see if anyone found it.
That's not going
to
work.
No, this was Epic Records, who had Michael Jackson. So
they didn't
care. They're not here to answer these accusations of
fake news. It's fake news. We're making it up.
Okay, no, I'm sure you're
anyway,
not, by
but,
the way.
But no, mid-80s, that's when things start. The funny thing is, the biggest hit in America, which we seldom play in Europe, a song called If You Leave that was in the movie Pretty in Pink. It was massive
and
over
was
there.
It because of the movie helped, obviously.
Totally,
the movie
definitely helped.
Wasn't that, even top 50 in the UK. Biggest hit in America.
Pretty in Pink itself, what a great song that is, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we thought that was going to be the lead single until they said, no, it's yours.
So. That, which is incredible.
Which is amazing.
It's the same title as the song.
And it was
a great song as well.
It was an amazing song.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So how many dates in all in North America?
31.
31. Proper North American
proper tour.
Yeah. And what was it like?
Right,
was it like? What is tour? What is you two, right? Yeah. At the age you are now.
Uh-huh.
You two on tour now, as opposed to maybe circa 1985 or something like that.
Same number of drugs on the bus. Now they're just statins and painkillers.
Okay. They're just drugs to keep us alive now.
Oh dear me!
Good line.
I'm just off the back of Rocket Man.
There you go.
I watched Rocket Man yesterday.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Oh, it's some. But
I it was
nobody told me how good it was. Everybody said it's 4 stars. It's 4.5 stars. Somebody would give it 5.
But no, we have to.
Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah,
what a movie!
Amazing.
And he did it on his own.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? At least you two had each other to fall out with. Yeah. He had to fall out with himself, for heaven's sake.
I think he was entirely capable of doing it, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he stitched himself back together. Oh, my goodness me. Right. You're a bit mysterious. You're a little bit aloof.
Yeah, well, we are. Well, the thing was, when we set out as a band, we didn't set out to be famous. We didn't want the fame side of things. You know, it started as an art band, not a pop band.
Yeah.
And so
it sounds pretentious,
it
but
does
it was.
No, it doesn't. No,
it
does for you, because you're being defensive. It doesn't sound pretentious at all. It sounds honest.
But the thing, well, it was honest, because what we were doing at the back room of Paul's mum's house, even our best friends thought was horrible. That's why we started a two-piece with a tape recorder. Nobody else wanted to play with us.
Right.
And so
too weird.
We were amazed when, you know, just... couple of gigs into being Orchestra Moves in the Dark, Tony Wilson decides to sign us to Factory and says, you're the future of pop. And I think we actually swore after him and said, no, we're experimental, but if you want to give us a record, we'll call ourselves pop.
Yeah.
They, 40 years career, talk about how things affect it. He was in the car, his wife, Lindsay Reed, got pulled out a bag and went, what's all this? He said, oh, reject cassettes. She pulled out one. Well, customer names, that sounds good. Oh, they played the club the other way. Not interested in the show. That's the kind of record you should be releasing on Factory. So he leaned over and patted her on the leg and went, all right, dear, I'll sign the fee.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If she hadn't pulled that cassette out of the bag in the car, we wouldn't have had a 14-year career.
We thought this was a myth, and we met her last year.
Yeah.
And she said, no, it's actually true.
Listen, what else do you want us to say? It's great. You're on a 21-date UK tour. You've got festivals booked next year. I'm trying to strong arm you into playing ours for the kids. That would be great.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Okay, thank you so much for that. You got other European dates. The Souvenir box set and singles collection is out this Friday. UK tour starts Wednesday, 23rd of October in Belfast. Some dates before Christmas and then some after throughout November. And then let's have a little look here. Then you go into 2020. Great. Mm. Well done. How many tracks on the box set?
Oh, well, millions.
There looks like a million here.
40 singles in 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interestingly, 22 previously unreleased tracks that he found in the archive.
How big is your loft?
I went into the EMI archive. It's one of those, like a movie, you know, with a big steel door and the big wheel that you have to turn to get in.
Like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It really was.
Was anybody in there? Was like Marilyn in there and people like that?
I just kept hearing, help, help from the back.
Great. Well, it's so nice to see you both.
Loads of stuff, yeah. And looking forward to the tour.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
From taking down a world-famous terrorist in Zero Dark Thirty to doing, quite frankly, unspeakable things with an elephant in the Brothers Grimsby, here to tell all is the immaculate Mr. Mark Strong.
Good morning, Mark.
It's very lovely to be here.
Very nice to have you. Thank you for coming. So, we hit a little bump in the road that we both made the most of on the day that Temple debuted, didn't we? Day it premiered, because you were going to be here, but then you couldn't be here. So you tell everybody what happened at 6:15 one morning before the show.
Well, the nature of filming is that, you know, time gets changed all the time. Schedules are never completed. Yeah. And on that particular day, I wanted to come here and be with you. And they decided in their wisdom that I should be filming. So at 6 a.m, I think, I was doing an interview with Dan that you then played later.
Yeah.
And I was just conscious of the fact that I wanted to be chirpy. So I think I yelled down the phone for about 20
minutes. Did you? All right, yeah. Okay. This is Cruella de Vil for Disney, and it's ongoing. So this is a big shoot. You're part of the gang till November.
Yeah.
What have you done as your... Because you play the...
I play John the Valet.
John the Valet.
I do a lot of lurking.
That's right. You do a lot of lurking, and you dish out a bit of sartorial advice now and again too.
Yes, well, Emma Thompson Cruella. Plays the Baroness, who is a phenomenally successful fashion designer.
Yeah.
And Emma Stone is the young Cruella. It's an origin story, really.
Right.
I'm not allowed to say too much.
I can tell you've played...
I'm trying to tread the path.
All right, okay, but the point is it's brilliant. It's been made in Britain, and it stars some great Brits.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark. Sorry. I didn't mean to do that to you. I apologise. Okay, so for people who don't know... how come you and your wife are staying in, having a bit of a mega mini series night on the sofa? How come that ended up with you here now?
Well, my wife is an incredibly successful producer. She came through the BBC, very good television producer, went and did films for a while, ran Ridley Scott's company for a bit, made some movies, but realised with the kind of advent of the golden age of TV...
Did you say she ran Ridley Scott's company?
Well, she was right. Kind of...
knows her onions.
She does, yeah. And having made movies, realised that TV is somewhere that you can really tell a story. And a movie is 90 minutes or a couple of hours... TV can go on for seasons long, so you can really flesh stuff out. She's very, very good at what she does, and we watch a lot of TV because we like to see what's out there. And one night we were sitting on the sofa, we were watching this strange Norwegian show called Valkyrien that we both kind of related to. We thought the imagination was incredible, and it was nothing like we'd ever seen before. And she said, I wonder if anyone's got the rights. I mean, I didn't even occur to me. I was just enjoying the show for what it was, but... 2 days later, we were on a plane to Oslo. We went and met the guys and said, listen, we love your show. Can we have it? And they said, yeah. So we found an amazing Irish writer called Marco Rowe, who's a theatre writer normally, who's done a couple of movies, Boy A with Andrew Garfield and Intermission. And he wrote all 8 episodes, which is quite unusual. Writers normally do a couple. He did all 8.
And so no mean task.
No.
8 one-hours for telly.
And television eats plot. Gosh. You know, you need to come up with narrative. And we had the original as a benchmark, so we adapted it, or he adapted it from there rather than remade it. It's an adaptation rather than a remake.
No, we were just talking about security and things like that about Disney and about generally, you know, scripts and things now. Game of Thrones was the legendary one, wasn't it? I mean, that doesn't exist anymore, but... They were given 7 scripts each with different endings. They were given 12-month contracts, which they would be paid for, but they would be killed off the next day. But it didn't matter because it was worth the extra costs for the drama, and the secret's not getting out. And you've just told us about vanishing scripts.
Yeah.
Tell us about those.
If you don't scroll down within a minute or two, the whole thing just goes fuzzy, and you have to go back and you have to do the password again and start again in order to read the script again. So it can't stay on your computer or be viewed by anybody else if you leave. I also did a movie, it was a Warner Brothers movie, and when you arrive in the mornings, usually you get what are called sides.
Yes.
So the day's work is on these pieces of paper, the scenes that you're doing. And usually you just keep those in your pocket, you have them on set, you know, and then you chuck them away. there was somebody whose sole job was to make sure she collected all of the sides of every person on set, and that can be up to, I don't know, 80, 100 people,
right,
at the end of the day. And if one was missing, she got in trouble.
If we invite you in for interviews in the future and you stop coming in, is it because I've got you in too much trouble in the past?
It's not you, it's for me. I mean, other people are really good at this. They just... But I love chatting, you know what I mean? And I want everybody to know what I'm doing. So I tend to sort of say all of this stuff, and then it's only afterwards everyone goes, well, you shouldn't really have said that, and you shouldn't have said that, right, but it doesn't
well,
really
let's say it again. Temple, all episodes available now on demand. Watch episode one of Temple for free, regardless of whether you're a Sky customer or not, via our link, virginradio.co.uk, now_. Good. Mark, good luck with the second series. Hope it happens for
you. Thank you. Thanks.
Give my love to Disney. however, you can do that.
Just waiting outside the door.
I'm sure they are. Yeah. And come and see us again soon.
I'd love to.
All right. Awesome. Mark Thank Strong, you. What a superstar.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's sold 40 million books worldwide and been awarded nearly as many honorary doctorates. Our next guest truly is a wizard of the written word. His latest book, The Body, A Guide for Occupants, is out today and here to reveal what's going on from your brain all the way down to your tippy toes. It's the one and only Bill Bryson.
Morning, Bill.
Morning. Thank you very much for that.
It's great, isn't it? He's the best at those. Right, so this book, The Body, A Guide for Occupants. Okay, now it's not necessarily a manual, but there's a few tips in there. It's a fantastic book. It's the most fun fact book for grown-ups there's ever been. My kids, you know, straight away over the dinner table, I just started to read out reams and reams of your book, and they loved it. Like, you know, we blink 14,000 times a day. Things like that, you know. How much would it cost to build Benedict Cumberbatch from scratch, which is how you open the book, because you had a similar thought about your own being when you were younger. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've spent my whole life wondering how we're put together. I mean, it was this, and the reason I called it A Guide for Occupants is because of, you know, I have this feeling that we all occupy this space, this kind of wobble of flesh, as I call it in the book. I mean, we all, you know, sort of move around in this sack, but without any, this sack of living tissue, but without having really any idea what goes on inside us. And I've always felt a little bit embarrassed by that, that if you, you know, if you unzipped me and told me to reach in and pull out my spleen or something, I wouldn't know where to begin delving for it.
Or what it was for.
Or what it was for. And if I, you know, if I found it, I wouldn't be able to tell you anything much about it. And I just thought, I just felt kind of ashamed and embarrassed. I didn't have any idea how we're all put together and what, you know, I'm 67 years old now and I just thought somehow this thing has been looking after me all these years. I've just been throwing beer and pizza down my throat for decades and yet, you know, I'm still upright and working pretty well. And I just thought I really ought to have a better idea of how we function. And what I found, Chris, was that the body is infinitely more complex and wondrous and kind of magical than I'd ever expected.
Yeah, as you say, regardless of what we feed it or do to it, you know, or do via it. So Benedict Cumberbatch, £197,000 for a new Benedict Cumberbatch. This is because you cost all the elements that are available in the universe, because we are made of the universe, that it would take to put him together. And now he's been chosen because that was already ongoing, wasn't it?
Yeah, this was done by the Royal Society of Chemistry. And it was actually it was for fun, but it was actually, they made it quite a serious effort to find out, to work out how much it would cost to assemble all the materials to make a human being. And they used Benedict Cumberbatch because he was the guest director of the Cambridge Science Festival that year, 2013. And so they worked out that if you assembled all the things that you're made of, and as you say, it's just the same elements you find in a pile of dirt, you know, I mean, but if you put all of those together, it would cost you that much money in order to make a human being, if you could. But of course, we can't even make... Science can't even make one cell in your body, never mind make a whole
you. It's so funny, isn't it? So we can observe, we are atoms that are able to observe other atoms, but we don't know how.
Yeah, that's,
and we
that's
don't know
pretty
why.
Finger right on it.
Because I was with Professor Brian Cox over the weekend, and he says that he is now obsessed with this question, how do we find meaningless in a meaningless universe? And that's the thing that he's wondering about, you know. And how come... us lot, our atoms have the option to even do that in the first place.
Life is a miracle. It's as simple as that. You know, as I say, the atoms that make you don't make life anywhere else in the universe. Anywhere in the universe. The same atoms, you know, the things, all calcium What's and phosphorus and oxygen and all that. They exist all over the universe and only in one place, as far as we know, here, they self-assemble magically into form, into life. And, you know, not just our lives, but earthworms and birds yeah. and everything that lives.
So the lady that you met, who is an expert on skin, what she says about the first layer of skin and the different colours that skin can be was an absolute revelation. We read it out today verbatim. Just take us through that, if you don't mind.
Well, it's very simple that your colour, what your race, which is everybody in the world judges you by, is 1 millimetre depth. If you took off the outer millimetre of your skin, which is obviously practically nothing. Nobody could tell. No, the greatest scientists in the world couldn't tell what race you are. Couldn't tell whether you're black or white or Asian or whatever.
It says here, it is extraordinary how much, she says this, the lady you're talking about, it's extraordinary how much such a small facet of our composition is given so much importance. People act as if skin colour is a determinant of character when all it is a reaction to sunlight. Biologically, there is actually no such thing as race. Nothing in terms of skin colour, facial features, hair type, bone structure or anything else that is a defining quality among peoples. And yet look how many people have been enslaved or hated or lynched or deprived of fundamental rights through history because of the colour of their skin. I mean, that is revelatory. To me, that's revelatory.
Well, it was to me. That's why it's in the book.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, no, I think it was. You know, in a dissecting room, a doctor showed me how much a millimeter of skin is and just sort of lifted a little patch of skin back off this cadaver. And you could see light through it. I mean, you could almost, it's almost transparent. That's how little, you know, that's how a little of you is race.
All right. Every chapter in this book is absolute solid gold. A couple of quickies before you go, Bill, because now you've got to go. It isn't true, is it, that our hair and our nails grow after we are deceased? That is not true. That is a myth.
That's...
I know. It's great pub ammo, but it is rubbish pub ammo.
My hair is barely growing now. But, after you die, it's... No, that's true. Almost all of the things that we all know, that we all feel we know yeah. about the body, turn out to be myths. The idea that you only use 10% of your brain, complete myth. The idea that the average man thinks about sex every second, 7 seconds, complete myth.
Is it less than that?
More than that.
They did a careful study and they found that people don't think about sex all that often at all. Just all that kind of stuff is mostly myths. The things that you think you know because you've been hearing them all your life, mostly are myths.
And you've been myth-busting in your book. What was your favourite bit of it?
I think the most amazing fact I learned was to do with the brain. The brain is the most wondrous creation in the universe. And I think the single most amazing fact to me in the book was that if you took 1 cubic millimeter of your brain, which is about the size of a grain of sand, there's enough processing power in that tiny grain of sand of your brain to hold all the movies ever made.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that amazing?
And also, and scientists, having said that, scientists still can't find a thought.
No, yeah. Well, how, you
know, we have them, but we don't know where they come from and we don't know where they are.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Scientists, just so they can examine the brain, they can have brains, they can be gifted brains for research, but they can't find a thought.
That's right, yeah.
That, I love that. And I also loved, you're talking about water, so your H2O, you've got your hydrogen, your oxygen, you've got 2 parts hydrogen to 1 part oxygen. Hydrogen and oxygen are basically weightless. Put together, they can weigh billions of tons.
Yeah, well, as I say in the book, if you've ever just tried to move a paddling pool full of water or carry a couple of buckets of water, water is really heavy, and yet it's made of these two, as you say, really, really light elements.
Okay, great book, Bill.
Thank you very much,
Chris.
Great to see
you, as always. Oh, my goodness me. Bill Bryson, The Body, the book is out today.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.